ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hey, Tegan Taylor here from Life Matters. When you think of grandparents, what comes to mind? Maybe a secret stash of lollies? Well, grandparents aren't just spoiling the grandkids anymore. They're raising them and paying the bills. This July on Radio National, The Grandparent Trap explores the joys and pressures of being a modern grandparent. The Grandparent Trap and much more on Life Matters. Search for Life Matters on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
They can see life passing them by. Mm. And the sand in the hourglass is like running out. And the really scary thing, I sort of felt that too, is as you start to feel worse about your life, there is one thing that helps you, that soothes that feeling, which is playing video games. And so that's the vicious cycle of addiction.
If you are a gamer, you might know who Dr. K is.
All right, guys, today we're going to talk about how Dr. K stays healthy. So I have a lot of responsibilities in life. I'm sure y'all do, too.
Dr. Alok Kanojia is his real name. And in addition to being a huge gamer himself, he is
a Harvard-trained psychiatrist who focuses on mental health in the digital generation. And we have a platform called Healthy Gamer, where we help people with tech addiction, media addiction, things like that.
His audience is huge. More than 300,000 followers on Insta, 700,000 on Twitch, and 3.3 million on YouTube. But 20-odd years ago, he was a floundering pre-med student, addicted to gaming.
I've failed out of college because I was playing too many video games. And as I started failing, it became harder to go to class and video games became more of an escape. I was playing for 16 to 20 hours a day, basically 7 days a week.
Oh my God, up to 20 hours.
Yeah, I mean, there were some days that I would sleep. I would go to bed at like 8 a.m. and I would wake up at noon and then I would continue to game. I would order fried rice in 2-pound segments, 1 kg. And then I would just fuel myself throughout the day by eating like fried rice. I think I started to become addicted to games when I was in high school. And then in high school, I had enough of like a structure around me to like keep me going to school and things. But once I had kind of the freedom of college and once I had unrestricted access to gaming, it just got really bad.
Now in his 40s, and by all measures, pretty successful, Dr. K wants people to learn how to have a healthier relationship with gaming. Because gaming isn't de facto a bad thing or a waste of time.
Soldiers who play video games have a 20% higher fluid IQ than soldiers who don't. So gaming really does teach some degree of problem solving.
But if you are a gamer who can feel sand filtering through the hourglass of your life, or you have someone in your life you're worried about, this episode is for you. Because we're breaking down what exactly makes video games so addictive.
You have to understand that our brain is wired to reward things that help us survive.
What to do when you have a problem, and how to parent a kid who might have one.
You can't be sober for someone else. So this is the big mistake that I think parents make.
I'm Sana Qadar, and from ABC Radio National, this is All in the Mind. Okay, so you're at this point where you're gaming up to 20 hours a week. You're eating fried rice.
Day.
20 hours a day. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's why I freaked out at first. And then I thought, wait, no, I misunderstood. It was 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
You're not sleeping when you're doing that.
Yes. But remember, you're like 18, 19. You can get by with 4 hours of sleep.
Yeah. How was your mental health?
Terrible.
Yeah.
So I remember I had to game to the point of absolute exhaustion. Because if I tried to go to sleep and I was awake for even 5 minutes, I would get a flood of thoughts about how I was ruining my life.
Oh my God.
And so I had to play until I was so tired that I would hit the pillow and I would like pass out.
And how long did this level of gaming continue for?
I mean, so at least 1 year. I then got put on academic probation and I was going to get kicked out of university. In the second year, I was still quite addicted, but I was able to not fail every class my second year.
The thing is, Alok knew within about a month of starting to game this hard that he was in a bad place, that he was addicted. And his parents soon knew he had a problem as well.
Yeah, so you know, I think my parents were very good parents. They were very loving, very caring. They tried like tough love. They tried being like loving and supportive, and like nothing was working. And so, you know, my dad, after my second year of college, and then he was basically like, look, this isn't working. So we got to try something else. And he said, you need to go to India. We had a very contentious relationship for those couple of years because I knew something needed to change, and so like something drastic, because the addiction was really severe and I was not able to like get out of it myself.
So Alok listened to his dad. He quit school and he went off to an ashram. And that's where he learned to notice his desires.
I was there for 3 months, was doing yoga and meditation for basically 6 to 12 hours a day. Learned a lot, started studying, like understanding the mind from a yogic perspective, and absolutely fell in love with it.
How did your brain cope and adapt with like going from gaming nonstop to meditating and doing yoga?
The first 2 weeks I was there were probably the worst weeks of my life because I was like crying every day, like deeply, deeply, deeply depressed. And then after about 2 weeks, I sort of got used to it. And then by the end of the month, I realized like no one ever taught me like how I work. We have classes for chemistry and biology and mathematics, but no one ever teaches you, here are your desires. Why can't we control our desires? Where do our desires come from? And I started to learn about myself in an incredibly satisfying way.
At the end of his 3 month stint, Alok thought, I want to become a monk too.
And my teachers were quite wise. They said, becoming a monk is about giving up your life, letting go of your attachments. And they're like, you have nothing worth giving up. Go get a doctoral degree. And then at the age of 30, if you still want to be a monk, then you can build something worth giving up and then give it up.
That is wise. That's interesting.
Yeah.
This time, Alok listened to the monks. He went back to the States, went to med school, specialized in psychiatry, and then addiction. And by the time that 30 hit, he no longer wanted to give up his whole life and become a monk. And around 2018, he had another idea.
Yeah, so I was working as an addiction psychiatrist at Harvard, and like basically there wasn't much going on with tech addiction. And I was also highly concerned about young men. Mm-hmm. And this is also back in 2018, right? So I think we now know that there's a problem with young men and the manosphere and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I basically felt strongly that there's a generation of young men that are being like left behind, or a generation of gamers, not just young men. And so I decided to start focusing on that around the time that I took a step back from my job. I was working in private practice and stuff. So I kind of shifted a little bit, beginning with nights and weekends, and I started just streaming on Twitch and trying to teach what I had learned about mental health to gamers on Twitch.
So sometimes people focus on the actions and sometimes people focus on the outcomes. I think that gamers, because games sort of train our brain to do this, they care about the outcome, right?
Like, and so that just grew really rapidly, especially during the pandemic.
And so tell me, Hayden, what are we talking about today?
I'm pretty sure we're talking about me being an incel.
Pandemic hit, and then we were the fastest growing stream on Twitch for a few months.
Were you already using Twitch before that point, or like,
yeah
for gaming?
I'm a gamer. Yeah,
yeah,
hell yeah.
So you're the perfect person to reach these people.
Yeah, so you know, someone said, like, this is kind of crazy. You're, like, trying to teach people about video game addiction on a gaming platform.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, it's like you're holding an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in a bar. And I was like, where else do you want to hold it?
That is interesting, right? Though, because watching some of your videos on YouTube, where, you know, I don't really go on Twitch, but they have, like, a video game like aesthetic in terms of when you watch other people playing video games on YouTube, they have like the section where those comments are scrolling through. You have the main section where like the video game action is happening. And then there's another box where the gamer is.
Yeah.
Like you've got that whole layout going on.
Yeah.
So are you trying to hijack the aesthetic for this purpose?
I mean, so I think this was, you know, my experience, and I think it's many people who are addicted to things, especially technology and video games, they can see life passing them by. And the sand in the hourglass is like running out. That's a really strong feeling for people who are addicted to video games. Is like, if you think about, you know, I played a bunch of games in high school. Now I don't know how to talk to girls. Now I'm in college. now I'm falling further behind. A lot of people start dating in college. I didn't date in college. Now I'm 25. I've never been on a date, you know, never kissed someone. And so like it's really scary how their life becomes like a light at the end of the tunnel that is like slowly disappearing. And the really scary thing, I sort of felt that too, is as you start to feel worse about your life, there is one thing that helps you, that soothes that feeling, which is playing video games. And so that's the vicious cycle of addiction.
On that point, on addiction, have you ever wondered what exactly is it that makes games so addictive? Like what kind of psychological buttons they push? Turns out, a lot of them.
Why is a game fun?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's interactive. There's little challenges. I don't know. I literally haven't gamed since I was like 12 playing Mario Kart with my younger brother.
Okay. So let me ask you a different question. And this is annoying because I'm a Socratic teacher and I'm a psychiatrist, okay? So why is anything fun?
Oh, my God.
Right? So like, think about like, you know, when you were a kid or if you see a kid playing, like why have human beings evolved fun?
It's connection.
Okay. So animals also have fun, right? When animals play, what are they doing?
They're interacting
good
with each other. Yeah.
Yes. And what kind of interaction? When two kittens are playing together, are they like focused on forming social bonds?
No, it's not necessarily there's a goal in mind. They're just kind of improvising, I guess.
Yeah. So if we look at like the basic goal of fun, it's actually to train the skills that we will need to survive.
Ah, okay.
Right? So like a cat will like pounce on you.
Right.
Right? So if we look at a simple game like tag, what's the evolutionary advantage? And you can look across all cultures across the globe. Everyone plays tag.
This is so funny. I have a six-year-old who's constantly playing tag with me and I've never thought about the evolutionary function of tag.
Right. Why does he like tag? Right? So it's fun.
Yeah.
But what is it training him to do?
Run away from danger?
Absolutely. And also to chase things. Mm. Right? So this is really important to understand. If you want to understand why games are addictive, you have to understand that our brain is wired to reward things that help us survive.
Right.
And what happened with video games is people stumbled into all of the different dimensions that are important for survival.
Wow. Okay.
The reason video games are more addictive is because they are slowly activating more circuits in our brain. I wrote a book called How to Raise a Healthy Gamer, and I kind of explained this because I think it's really important for parents to understand why your kid is addicted to video games. Mm-hmm. And we basically have all of these psychological needs. So one example of a need is mastery. Human beings like to get better at stuff. It is intrinsically satisfying to be good at something. Connection, right? So we like connecting with other human beings. So what's happened is video games used to be addictive because sure, you could master the game, but then along came a game called World of Warcraft. And now in order to play this game, you had to band together with 39 real human beings and take on a challenge that a single human being cannot win. So over time, what's happening with games is that they activate the different circuits of our brain that are important to us. They give us a sense of challenge. They give us a sense of mastery. They give us a sense of identity. So I may have been failing out of college and a loser in college, but when it came to the Warcraft 3 North American ladder, I was one of the best 100 players in North America.
Wow.
So gamers will have a sense of identity that becomes their sense of identity, becomes their sense of pride. And having a sense of identity is like important for human beings. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so what video games basically do is they satisfy our psychological needs in an artificial way.
Mm.
And that's why they're so addictive. So what a lot of parents don't understand is when a parent sees their child playing a game, it's not a game. It's the way that I interact with my peers. It's the source of my social connections. It's the source of my self-worth. It's the one thing that I can be good at when the rest of life is hard. So games are fundamentally addictive because they basically satisfy our psychological needs.
Right. That is really fascinating. Like, that's the most comprehensive kind of explanation I've heard. So my obvious follow-up to that is what your advice to parents would be. But before I ask that, actually what I want to know is how then can parents assess whether their kids' gaming is at a normal, fun, okay level, or whether they should be concerned about how much their kid is gaming.
Yeah, so if it causes a problem, it is a problem.
Mm, okay, but then I guess it's going to be different for every family if certain yes. parents are more strict about it. Right, yeah.
So I wouldn't say strictness of the parents. I think you're correct. Parents may think it's a problem, but if we look at the psychiatric definition of addiction or any illness, it's impairment of function. So is it interfering with their school? Is it interfering with your professional life? Is it interfering with your relationships? Is it interfering with your physical health? Is it interfering with your mental health?
Right.
So if it's causing problems in any of those dimensions, it is a problem.
And so then what is your advice to parents who are like, oh yeah, these are issues with my kid. How do I claw this habit back?
Yeah. So first thing, I learned this the hard way after 5 years of epic failing. You can't be sober for someone else. So this is the big mistake that I think parents make. And it was beautiful in your question. How do I claw it back? How do I make my child not addicted?
Yeah.
So my whole approach is like, there's a usually antagonistic relationship between parent and child. And as long as they're fighting you, it's not going to work.
Mm.
So I'm a big believer in teaching restraint, not restriction.
Okay.
And so a big part of how you do that is to understand why your child is playing the game. If the game is my source of social connection, it's going to be really hard to get me to quit while I don't have social connection anywhere else. So what I encourage parents to do is, first of all, talk to their children about what is so appealing about the game. Understand which psychological needs it's fulfilling, and then start building alternatives to those needs. Because most people who are addicted to video games don't want to be, right? So if I feel embarrassed about the person I am in real life, let's say I'm an overweight teenager with acne, and I don't like the person I am in the real world, it's nice to retreat into video games. The solution to that problem is your kid wants to be in shape. They want to be physically attractive. They want to be able to hold up their head up high. Mm-hmm. And when you support that goal and you're like, okay, well, if you don't like the way that your body is, like, what can we do about that? Let's go to martial arts. Let's learn how to defend ourselves. Like, let's get in shape. And it's amazing how much the addiction just sloughs away once their needs are being met elsewhere.
I can imagine there might be some parents who hear that and think, you know, that's easier said than done. I've tried to pull them away and do other activities in the real world, and they're extremely resistant, and I'm at the end of my tether. I don't know what to do. What would you say to someone who's feeling like that?
Yeah, so that's a huge part of how to raise a healthy gamer. So there's a whole chapter on dealing with resistance. Parents are usually pretty good at understanding their kids, but parents need a new skill set to compete against the multi-billion-dollar corporations that are trying to addict your child. And so parents are outgunned. The good news is that there's a lot they can do if you learn how to adopt a stance of curiosity. So asking what questions? What do you think about gaming? Like, what do you enjoy about gaming? Because most kids, you know, think that you're there to take their game away. So they're going to kind of clam up. And if you stop trying to get them to change, they will open up. So this is one of these like weird Eastern Zen kind of things, right? Where it's like the harder you squeeze water, the more it runs out of your fist. So this is one of those things where if you stop trying to push the kid and you become a safe harbor for their concerns, they will start to volunteer the problems that they have with games. And this is where you have to do something really important as a parent. The moment your kid says, yeah, I don't want to play so many games, you're tempted to take that ammo, load it into the chamber, and be like, ha ha, so let's stop. No.
Okay.
What you want to do is, oh, so you don't like playing games. What do you want to do about that? Right? You make them responsible. And that's because what parents end up doing is the more responsibility they take for uh-huh. fixing the problem, the less responsibility your kid takes.
Yeah, right. Okay. God, parenting is so hard. I feel like the longer I do this show, the more I'm like, oh my God, this is tricky. Well,
I mean, it's only hard because we don't learn how to do it. So we have a lot of instinct going for us, but just like anything else, like what's the difference between something that's easy and hard? You know, is changing a tire hard?
I mean, I don't know how to do it, so yes, but
there you
if
go.
You learn it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I also want to ask about if there's someone listening who is themselves a gamer, you know, I'm thinking a 20, 30, 40-year-old. If someone recognizes themselves as being a bit addicted to gaming as they're listening to you talk, what can someone do for themselves? Like, what's the first step they can take to start curbing that addiction?
I would say the most important, well, I mean, there's so many first steps. So I'm going to kind of give you two answers. So the first is to understand why you game, right? Really think about what is it about this that makes it so easy for me to do? Because I'm a big believer in like self-understanding. Mm-hmm. And now I'll give you, I think, the better answer for a 30-minute show. Okay. The skill that most gamers lack is the tolerance of boredom.
Mm.
So you know how like when you feel hungry, that's tied mm-hmm. to a physiologic signal. Like if your right. blood sugar is low, you feel hungry.
Yep.
Feeling bored is your brain's craving of dopamine. So people don't realize that when your brain has like low levels of dopamine transmission, because if you think about it, when I feel hungry, I get attracted to eat things, right? So when I feel yeah. bored, I get attracted to a device, which will then activate my dopamine circuitry. Right. So boredom is actually dopamine withdrawal.
Mm.
If you want to resist gaming, if you want to conquer gaming, the most important thing is to learn how to be bored.
This feels very applicable to social media as well, I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Is all the advice for gaming pretty much the same for social media, or does it differ in any main
yeah,
way?
So I think there is a large portion of advice that is shared between all technology addictions and right. all addictions for that matter. But what's really interesting is there are unique effects on your brain from social media versus video games. Mm-hmm. So a good example of this is social media usage leads to way more body dysmorphia, leads to way more like concern about your appearance and your identity. Whereas video gaming usually doesn't lead to body dysmorphia. So there are specific things. So there are certain like meditation practices and things like that I teach for people who are addicted to social media that have to do with resolving our ego, conquering our ego. Those are sometimes less important for gamers.
Now, one thing we haven't acknowledged yet is that while the strategies that Alok, Dr. K, mentioned a moment ago are all things you can try on your own, on yourself, or with your kids, sometimes what you need is real, serious clinical intervention. But in Australia, unless you can afford private treatment, there is only one dedicated public gaming disorders clinic. It's at the Fiona Stanley Hospital in WA. And that's a problem because research from Macquarie University that was published in 2022 found that about 3% of Australian kids can be classified as having gaming disorder, and about 10% meet the criteria for hazardous gaming. But there's another group that Alok is increasingly worried about, not just for gaming addiction, but for screen addiction in general.
I actually think there's an epidemic of gaming addiction in the elderly that they don't realize.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So if you talk to people who are, you know, have young kids now, oftentimes their experience when they visit grandpa and grandma is that they're on the iPad.
Yes, I've noticed this among grandparents in my life. They're on the yes. phone a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So like tech addiction in the elderly, like, so, yeah. you know, I kind of tried to sound the alarm back in 2015 about gaming addiction. And now I'm telling you that we're going to, in the next 10 years, we're going to see that the elderly have a severe tech addiction problem.
Yeah, the boomer social media scroll addiction yeah. is real.
Absolutely, right? It's scary because the elderly generation really has no tech literacy. So I think, you know, the people who are millennials were sort of like the best off because we started using technology before it was super, super, super addictive. And then we kind of have, like, we sort of know, we have insight into, like, how addictive things have gotten.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm petrified of adding any more social media things to my repertoire because yeah, right? I'm like, no, one is enough.
Whereas if you talk to one of your grandparents, they may be scared about all kinds of things. But I don't think that they think social media is going to be damaging to them.
Yeah, yeah. The other question I wanted to ask, you mentioned how in 2018, when you were sort of at the beginning of a healthy gamer, you were worried about young men and the manosphere, which was in a much earlier phase back then. As the manosphere has gotten more intense in the years since, have you found it harder to reach young men with your content, or they're more resistant, or like what have you noticed has evolved in that time since 2018?
So Actually, I found it's way easier. So I think the appetite, so I know people are bleak, but you know, I think our growth has been pretty large. And I think that people are starting to realize that kind of the toxic manosphere is like not working. So there are lots of young men looking for guidance, and they don't necessarily want to go the toxic route. You know, so if there's an alternative, then people are more than happy to engage with it. So I think the manosphere used to be like very anti-therapy. Now it's very pro-therapy, right? Now it's like, okay, if you're having relationship problems, like you need to work on yourself first. So it's been quite actually heartening to me. I think things are moving in the right direction, interestingly enough.
And so what is your relationship with gaming now? How many hours a day or a week do you game?
It depends on the week, but anywhere from like 2 to 20.
Okay. Hours a week, not a day.
Yeah. A week. So I mean, I play video games with my kids, but usually, you know, I think gaming is a source of recreation. And it becomes a problem when it stops being recreation, when it becomes the way that I manage my anxiety, when it becomes the way that I, you know, feel good about myself, when it becomes the way that I numb myself, then it's a problem.
What are you playing?
Right now, I'm playing Monster Hunter Stories 3 and Total War Warhammer. And
these are like
Dota 2.
Right. A whole different language to me.
Yeah, these are like real nerd games. Like this is like true gamer.
And what do you play with your kids?
So I'm playing Monster Hunter with my kids. They're 8 and 10. So one really interesting thing is I use games to teach them parenting and life skills. So this is something that I kind of stumbled into. But so my kids have recently been getting into fights. And so one of the things that I taught them was like in a video game, like when you cooperate with people, your abilities get stronger. Mm-hmm. So now I'll ask them, you know, when they make like a comment, like a cutting comment, what do you think that does to your kinship? So kinship is the statistic in the game that the higher your kinship goes, the stronger your abilities become. And it's really interesting how using games as an analogy, it like really helps them understand.
Mm.
I had them play a cooperative game called Split Fiction, and it was really beautiful to see. At the beginning of the game, they're fighting, but then they have to learn how to cooperate.
Yeah.
And then they get better at communication. It's very interesting.
And so, yeah, I guess as a final message to, you know, people who might be listening who are like, oh God, I never want to deal with my kid being addicted to gaming. My plan is just to never let them go near it or, you know, be very firm about it. What would you say about like, what are the potential benefits of gaming versus how to watch out for the harms?
So there's a really interesting study that the United States Department of Defense did in 2015 that found that soldiers who play video games have a 20% higher fluid IQ than soldiers who don't. So gaming really does teach some degree of problem solving. Nowadays, it used to be that parents would be like my dad was like, Alok, you need to do studies, not to play waste time playing games. Like you need to have a job one day.
I can imagine him perfectly.
Yeah. And the scary thing is like one of the most lucrative careers you can have now is to be like an esports professional.
Yeah.
So gaming is now a career, right? So that argument doesn't work. I think that the biggest advantages, I think, are sort of like if you play with your kids, I'm pretty sure that you'll learn a lot about them and about the potential benefits.
That is psychiatrist Dr. Alok Kanogia, better known online as Dr. K from Healthy Gamer. Now, if you want to see more All on the Mind, not just hear it, we've been clipping up parts of our interviews on social media. You can find them on the ABC Health Instagram, at ABC Health, or my own Instagram, at Sana_Kadar. And you can also head to YouTube and search All in the Mind on the ABC Science page. That is it for All in the Mind this week. Thanks to producer Rose Kerr, senior producer James Bullen, and sound engineer Roy Huberman. I'm Sana Kadar. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.